hard to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it, you gotta go hard and just dig deep inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive, just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in. I came to win, yeah, I came to win.
What's going on, everybody? This is Kyle Hunter. I'd like to welcome y'all back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, inspiration, dedication. And as always, this is high-level conversation. As we always say, just encouraging you to be your better version of yourself. And today's a really, really, really dope day, because on this episode, we've got somebody who is just highly accomplished. He's a super producer. In my eyes, he's produced for a lot of phenomenal different rappers, singers. He's put out just countless, countless amounts of music, regardless of album projects, EPs, and he's just a super talented person. And also, most importantly to me, he's one of my dear friends, and he's also the co-owner of Rhythm Couture. I'd like to welcome to the Diagnosis Success Podcast my brother, Robert Ron C, also known as SK. What's up, brother?
Yo, yo, yo. How you doing, man? That was too much. That was too much. I appreciate it.
No doubt. No doubt, bro.
I'm grateful to be here.
No doubt. No doubt, bro. Well, you know, we appreciate you, man. I appreciate you just as a friend. And, you know, we'll get into the business side as we talk about other things. But you're just such a dynamic person. And I just feel like, you know, just so talented, man. Like really talented. I know you humble, you know, and you don't gotta boast. I'll do that for you.
I literally spend like, you know, 50% of my day questioning everything. You know what I mean? So it's like, damn, I gotta get better at this, that, and the other.
Well, I think that's, you know, musicians as a whole, we're always like that, you know, like it's always like trying to just raise the bar and make sure everything's perfect, you know. But we're gonna get into it, man. You know, I think to start, like, really to let the listeners get to know you as a just person, like, you know, your upbringing, can you talk about like the early days for you, what that looked like, things like that?
Yes. I essentially grew up in my mom and dad were separated when I was one or two or something. So I grew up in two different households, but my mom and dad both loved music. So I was always surrounded by music from the time I was little. And I went to a magnet school, like a free magnet school in Kansas City, Missouri. And in kindergarten, they had a music program, like right from the very beginning of school. So you would go to, I remember going to the first class where we got to pick our instruments. And they told us, you know, they spent the beginning of the class talking about the different instruments, and then you got to pick one. And I ended up with the cello for whatever reason. But I started doing that from real early. And then it was cool, but I wasn't like great at it or anything. It's not like I was some sort of cello phenomenon or anything like that. I wasn't that excited by the classical music and all that kind of stuff. And when I was little, I didn't know what, you know, I had no, reference to like what this was or what it really meant or anything like that. So it didn't, I didn't think it was that important, but it was something I did, same way I did any other class. So right from the beginning, I was listening to a lot of music, and then I had experience playing an instrument from that class. And then my dad, I remember by the time I was probably 11 or 12, my dad, who had always been showing me music stuff and like getting me excited about music my whole life. So I had a priming or whatever you want to call it for this. he gave me a bass guitar for Christmas 1 year. And that's when I really, really fell in love with music, because I would listen to my favorite songs and play along with them and try and figure out, you know, it was before I was on the internet and stuff, so I would just listen to it and try and figure out how to play along with it. And I did that for a couple of years and found other friends who played instruments through school and stuff like that. And we would mess around, do whatever. but I kind of like got attached to it in a way where I would walk around the house with my bass on me. Like, I just was playing it all the time. And then when I got a little older, by the time I was like 14, 15, I got into jazz band at school. So I was playing bass in jazz band. And then I got a computer and I was getting on the internet. So I was like I found like tabs and stuff like that. So I was like getting a little more, you know, I started by ear, obviously, but it gave me like another perspective on it. And then, you know, I think because of the fact that I was kind of like got into the computer and was like a little bit of a nerd or whatever you want to call it. Like, I just loved, you know, video games and stuff like that. I figured out I could download Fruity Loops. and I got like a beat making software when I was it was probably 14 or 15. I can't really remember exactly when, but and it was like Fruity Loops 2 or 3 or 1, and it was early. I remember because I got Reason 3 shortly after that, or Reason 2, or it was right at the beginning. But anyways, I got into that and I figured out I could like play around with the computer and make songs. And I just got addicted to it. It's pretty much been written ever since then. Like, I, you know, started out with the cello in elementary school, got a bass when I was like 11 or 12, and got kind of like obsessed with music at that point in terms of like playing it all the time, listening to a lot of music and trying to play along with it. And then by the time I was like 15, 14, I had gotten computer software where I could like make loops and stuff like that. And I never really turned back from there. But I'm 30, almost 33. I'm 32 now. So this is a long, long time ago at this point. I've been making music over half my life, I guess. I've always been curious and I've always wanted to try different things. So my like intro at 14, 15 with Fruity Loops and then Reason and stuff like that quickly transitioned to MPCs and SPs and not using the computer at all for making the music. And then back to the computer and so forth and so on. So I'm using Ableton and other stuff, but I've gone back and forth through a ton of different things because it's just fun being creative and it's fun trying new things.
Wow, man. That's pretty dope to see like the progression, right? It's like, when your kids are young, you never know what you introduce them to at that young age, mm-hmm. that trajectory, you know? Mm-hmm. So to actually see that, and that's so dope, you know, to go from that cello, you know, to what you've become today is like so phenomenal, man. Can you tell me like, what was the first record that you listened to that you think had an impact on you musically, where you was like, when you listened to that record, it was like definitive. You was like, yo, I want to do music, man. Like for real.
That's hard because there's been multiple stages of that kind of like, so I can think of if I had to say a few albums that made me be like, I'm going to definitely make music. One of the ones that I found through like a an older step sibling. I guess they're not a step sibling anymore. But they were at one point like a step sibling, I guess. They showed me the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magic, and that record was for me at the time. I was young, like I said, it was real early, 14, 15. It blew my mind because it was just different than what I was hearing on the radio stations at the time, and you know, but that. I was playing bass, so Flea, the bass player, was a dope bass player, and that their whole dynamic was mostly bass and drums. Like, that was the special part to me. Now I can hardly listen to it for whatever reason, but anyways,
not to cut you off. What was the changing point? Like, because you said now you can hardly listen to it. Is it just a difference in appreciation for the music, or what is it?
Well, some of the tracks I really like. I can't get into the vocals as much anymore is the main part. If I could listen to the album as an instrumental, I would be down with it. But
when you say the vocals, do you mean the lyrics or the arrangement of them, like how it's
executed? Neither of those things, just the way they sound. Yeah, just the way they sound. Okay. And that is not, like, I'm not trying to disrespect Anthony Kiedis, because I've loved Red Hot Chili Peppers for a long, long time, but for, I think it's just one of those things where it was something I listened to when I was a lot younger, and it kind of makes me cringe sometimes now. For all I know, he might feel the same way about it. I don't know. I still really appreciate it, and I can listen to it sometimes. It's weird though, because there's not a lot of low end in that album, which is kind of strange. But anyways, that was one when I was little. That was an album that like really kind of like perked my interest in like, I'm gonna really get into playing bass, and then. The things that got me into making beats were Hieroglyphics, Souls of Mischief, and Hieroglyphics. Yeah. I got 93 Till Infinity, and what's the Hieroglyphics? Not Full Circle, but the one before that, the one with like You Never Knew on it, and Mics of the Round, you know, I can't remember what the fuck that was called right now. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank. But the earlier album before, see, this is my problem with when I was little, it was all just CDs and my like Discman. So I can't ever remember song names because it was just track numbers. It was always like, oh, I love track 7.
Track 7.
Or I love track 8. You know, I was never like, oh, this is the name of that song, or this is the name of that. But Hieroglyphics, Beastie Boys. And then, so once I was into I was already making beats, but what made me get into sampling and chopping up records was... listening to Pete Rock, Digging in the Crates, Boot Camp Click. Mm-hmm. I remember listening to the I and Pete Rock. That album was dope, and that made me be like, because I was already making tracks and I was hearing things on there that was like, damn, this just sounds. This is hitting me in a way that I can't quite like create in my own music, and it was before I had ever sampled anything. so I kind of like analyzed it and thought about it and was like, all right, so they're chopping up records. I'm gonna chop up some records and check it out. And then I got, you know, spent years. Doing that with hardware and no computer. So I've been through a lot of phases, man. Like, now I'm using computers again and playing bass and keys and recording drum sounds and all that kind of stuff, and using samples and stuff sometimes. But it's been a while since I've really like chopped up records. At this point. I miss it, honestly.
Wow, man.
But
that's super dope, though, man. Like, you know, to kind of see like you know, the progression too in that regards, where it's like, all right, listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, getting inspiration, but then the growth too to transcend that into hip hop, and it's like, yo, Souls of Mischief, Pete Rock, like all those joints, man. Like I mean, man, Pete Rock, Soul Survivor, all those things, man. Like you know, just classic records, like great hip hop that you feel in your soul, you know. So you know, and that's actually a segue too, because like when I listen to your production, I get like a lot of soulfulness in your music. Like it's not like just empty shallow beats. Like there's a lot of layers to it. It sounds very full when I listen to your music, you know. And not every producer has that talent. Like you've got beat makers and then you've got producers, right? Like people that actually produce a record. Like you can hear the bass on there, you can hear all these different elements. And I think like you're just so dope at that. Like did it take time? Like the first beat that you ever made, like, you know, can you talk about that process? Like, you know, what that was like compared to now? Like, I know now you're polished, you know, next level. But in the beginning, like early essential knowledge days, like.
Honestly, bro, there's a, you remember the website SoundClick?
Of course.
I got a SoundClick link that's still up.
Wow.
From way back when. Under a different name, you're not gonna be able to Google it. But I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you privately. so producing a record versus being a beat maker, like I feel like that is something that I love to do, and it does entail more than just making a track. It involves working with the artist, and as you know, we've done full projects and full albums together. So we actually like produce the record, you know what I mean? It's not just like a beat and a rap and a mix.
Right.
It's like a thought out thing. And I do that with most, that's why you don't see me selling. I've been making beats for 15 years and I've never just like sold beats, you know, because I like to work with people that I want to work with and I want to produce the project. You know what I mean? I want to be like a part of it in that sense. When it comes to how did I get to that point? I think that a lot of it comes from me being with my dad, and he's a piano player, and he always had musician friends who would come over and jam once a week, and they would, you know, play chord changes basically, and just improvise. So they, you know, we're playing in the key of whatever, and you know, we're doing these changes, or you know, and my dad, when I was little, he would have me sit in with my bass when he got me the bass, and like he didn't give a fuck. He was just like, just play, like you'll figure it out. So I learned from a young age, ear, like. I could hear wrong notes. Like anytime I hit something wrong, I could hear it. And then whenever I hit something right, I could hear it. So you just kind of over time, you know, figure out what's right and what's wrong. And then the transition from that into the producing it's like the same thing. It's like what fits and what doesn't, and what makes this sound, what makes it the best version of itself. But it is like one of those things where it's just a lot of hours of doing it and being and loving it and being, it's my favorite thing in the world, really, like other than my family, my daughter, you know. It's like, definitely, it's like the best thing,
definitely. And I think too, like, and you could probably attest to this, that music is therapeutic.
100%, right? Yeah, you know? 100%.
Like when you have,
it's essential, like
it is.
Yeah, I get all sorts of messed up when I don't take the time to work on stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a release. It's definitely a mental release, man. And some would argue a spiritual, spiritual moment too, right?
100%. Yeah. And that's the best thing about music, is that when you when you're doing it, you transcend. You go to a place that's not right here in all the bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the stresses of life. Like when I sit down to create, I go to another place. You know, what kind of mood I'm in. It doesn't matter what is going on in the world. If I'm gonna do that, if I'm gonna do my process and I'm gonna make music, that's what I'm doing. And there's not anything else that can get in the way of, like, can, you know, be a part of that. And I was almost said it can get in the way of that. That's not true, because bad energy can definitely get in the way of me being creative. I can get, it can stop me up. But what I was trying to get at is, like, when I get to that point where I am creating, nothing else matters. You know, none of the other stuff is gonna get in the way of that at that point.
That's right. That's right, man. It's like heaven on earth, man. It's like once you get in that zone and you just zone out, it takes you to another place. And people feel it in the music. Like, they know music that comes from the soul. And when you was in that zone, they feel it. They're like, oh, this is hitting. Like, this is fire. You know what I mean? Like, no question. No question, man. So you if I, you know, and I'm not being biased. Like, obviously everybody knows we're friends. We're also business partners, but I'm not being biased when I say this. Like, your output is, like, so prolific, man. Like, you know, you're like Tupac of beats, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, every time, like, I went to Apple and I was just scrolling. I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, when does it end? It was like, I think it was up to like like 700 song, and then it kept going. It was more, I was like, man, I was like, yo, you know, I put out a lot of music, but man, like, you know, like, does inspiration strike you like around the clock? Like, meaning like you'll get ideas, you'll get notes just randomly, and you're like, all right, I gotta do this? Or is your process more once you get in your studio? Like,
I always feel a little inspired, at least, whether things are going good or bad. I'd always rather be making music, basically. So there's that. I think that it goes back to what you were talking about with music being therapeutic. Like, life is crazy. Life is hard. And I gotta make music. You know, so like, I, being able to put it out is cool. And it's awesome being able to have it out there for people to listen to. But the most important thing is making it for me. And it's all like, it's all tied into just like getting out of work or going through the day-to-day process and needed to make music. So being prolific is more just because I've just been doing it for a long time, and this is what I do. It's who I am. Like, I'm gonna spend time doing it to keep my to stay sane, and I just love it. I just love it, and I have for forever, for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, definitely, man, definitely. You you know, talking about the projects too and the output and the things like that, what projects are you working on right now at the moment that you know, you got coming that people can keep an eye out for? What things you got?
Well, I guess the main things would be, we have one we just finished, which is cool. So that's going to be coming out in the near future. I have one with Chell Strong that is in, it's pretty much done. Like, all the vocals are in. And I'm just getting some extra stuff from musicians at this point. Some like trumpet from my friend John Colbreth, and a guitar from my friend Max Bronstein. And I am also, it's getting mixed and mastered right now. There's another album with that I made with a producer in Norway named Type Raw. Him and I did a kind of a boom bap, really raw boom bap album that has different vocalists on all the tracks. So that'll be a cool kind of compilation style album. I like it a lot. I like all the current ones that I have in the, you know, on the stove. I really like. And then I think the last one other than that is one with Danny Whitney, who's a really dope keyboard player and musician. And his album came together really, really good. But he went to a studio and re-recorded a bunch of parts of it on like acoustic piano. It got some extra vocals, stuff like that. So I'm finalizing that. That's another one that all the tracks are in pretty much. And then besides that, I just have a bunch of little beat tapes and singles and stuff like that I'm doing on my own. But I have three different instrumental albums that are just solo projects that are almost done and in the works right now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, pretty much. That's pretty much it. There's a couple of things that I didn't mention.
Well, I know you got a lot of tricks up your sleeve, bro. can't give them all the secret sauce. Yeah. you know, in addition to being a super dope producer, you are also a businessman because you co-own Rhythm Couture. Can you just talk about like the music licensing side of things too? And, you know, for people who aren't familiar with music licensing or what that is and what it is that we do, maybe you can just give some insight about what that side looks like for you.
Well, I guess it goes kind of, once again, it relates to the talking about how the being prolific and creating frequently, you end up with a ton of material, right? So the fact that as an artist, you're able to create a lot of music, a lot of, you know, art, I guess, and what some people will call content, I guess, too. You can theoretically take that and turn it into a stream of revenue, the same way you would if you were really good at, you know, working with wood and be doing carpentry and you got a job with a company that was doing carpentry. You know what I mean? The idea is you have this trade and you can create something special with it. It's a way to monetize it. And it's interesting to me because when we make music, we always want it to be the, we make it to be the focus, right? Like we're not making it to not be listened to, right? You get what I'm saying? So it's kind of counterintuitive to be like, all right, I'm gonna sell this or let someone use this for background music, right? But it you know, there's one side of it where it kind of enhances the vision of the filmmaker or the TV producer or whatever. But at the same time, there's the fact that like you have something that you've created that isn't, you put your energy into, and it's not giving back to you necessarily in a monetary way. It is a trade-off you can make when it comes to taking your music and your art and turning it into a revenue stream. But it's something that I think a lot of people are just not aware of and not tuned into. So I think it's important to keep spreading the knowledge about it and getting people aware of what it is and how to get involved in it.
Definitely. Knowledge is power. And, you know, to your point, music licensing gives musicians a broader reach. And when you're a musician, when you come up, all you think about conventionally is, let me get this record deal. Let me get on, right? Like, I got to get put on. Like, let me try to get an A&R, get a record deal, and get some distribution. But music licensing gives musicians that broader reach in terms of, well, You don't need to pay a publicist. You don't need to get a record deal, because if you get a song placed on prime television that's in syndication, you essentially have money coming in on a monthly basis. And that's like a retirement plan, you know?
Right.
So I think the fact that we're able to give artists that opportunity and being able to get them that more exposure, I mean, you know, it's a great thing. And I, you know, I'm really like honored just to, I mean, we're brothers, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, to be able to forge this road with you to try to help musicians, because that's what it's about, paying it forward. You know what I'm saying?
Like, exactly. That's why we started all this in the first place, is just to, like, we both have a circle of peers that are so talented and so prolific. And we wanted to help spread what you've learned. I mean, you're the one who has really been in the trenches with this kind of stuff. Like, you've taught me so much, and you're the one who got me up to speed on all of this. So it's awesome to be able to keep it going, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, man. Most definitely, brother. This is a question I'm gonna ask you, and want to see what your thoughts are on this. Who are your top five producers? If you could only pick five that you would say are like your favorite producers of all time, like, who would that be? Top five that are alive.
I'm so bad at this kind of stuff. This is why I don't like doing these kind of things, because it changes all the time.
Right.
Like, favorite five, or like the ones, like, basically, do I have to take history into the picture and be like, all right, I like my favorite five, like my favorite, not the ones who I think should be like, if you looked at a history book, like they deserve credit.
Yeah, just the ones that are your personal favorite five, like your top five.
Okay, so I don't have to worry about like any of that. Okay, because there's a lot of really, really dope producers. Mm-hmm. But if I had to just pick five right now, man, that's so hard. It's so hard for me to even say one, because like, I like all the people that anyone would think of. You know, I'm a fan of Showbiz, Dilla, Pete Rock, Primo, Eric Sermon. Yeah, I like all the classics. But let's see. Oh, man. If I had to just pick one, well, I think I'm gonna have to just list off some of my homies, because like, they're the people who I actually like listen to and get inspired by and all that kind of stuff. But the catch 22 about doing that is I'm always bound to leave someone out who I really like.
So, you know, maybe it's just producers you don't know. You don't know, but you like them.
Yeah. Man. All right. So I'm not going to even try and get to five. I'll just say a couple things that I've been liking recently. Oh man. Well, the most recent thing, I guess, let's just do this. This is what I've been listening to recently. G-Mills, beatmaker, who I've known about for a while and been kind of in contact with. He just released an album that I've listened to like over and over. Recently, with, I think he did it with a guitar player, called Computer Soup, with Chris Mazuera. It's cool, you know. It's, I like the vibe. I like the vibes a lot. I like the energy. The it's like a perfect version of this kind of chill hop thing. To me, it's like a perfect example of what people are trying to do with the chill hop stuff, in a way that's tasteful and enjoyable, because some of it's super boring to me, to be completely honest. Besides that, let's see, what have I been listening to? I guess I love Jansport J.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's the man. Yeah, that's my bro also, so I got to say that out there. But that's someone I like to play regularly. Mm-hmm. Kurt Stewart, also a friend, but someone I play often.
Kurt's dope.
Yeah. Especially having a little baby. now that I have a baby. He has a bunch of super, super mellow stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've played it a lot throughout the early years of my little baby's life. I like Kalen Ellis, the Count. Oh, yeah, those guys, those two guys, both of them are killing it. I know it's probably bad to lump them together because they're two separate people, but I feel like they both kind of really took off at the same time with the way that they were presenting their music.
And he did something with Lupe, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think House, something like that. But it's just super soulful, super simple. Reminds you that like music is about feeling more than chops, like technical knowledge or, you know, musical knowledge. But obviously super, super knowledgeable person with that said. But it doesn't have to be complicated to have a lot of feeling. So, but yeah, man, I don't know. I'm bad. Like I said at the beginning, I'm bad at that kind of stuff. I like listening to music and I listen to a bunch of different stuff, and I don't keep like a bank of like, these are my favorite things right now. And a lot of it like will not be current, you know. A lot of the stuff that I have in my, for example, one thing I keep going back to over the years recently is I love Fiona Apple records. I love the way that they're mixed. Like, I love the way that they sound. Title by Fiona Apple, like it just has a crazy, crazy sound to me. And it's a very, very like hip hop sound, to be honest.
Well, you know, because I'm familiar with Fiona Apple. I never listened to her music actually, but what type of genre was she classified as? Like, what type of?
I don't even know. I'm also bad at that kind of stuff. People ask me what kind of genre of music I make. I'm like, I don't know. I just make music. But I think it's like indie or whatever. I don't know. I mean,
it was interesting.
The album that I'm talking about, like we had on cassette in my mom's car when I was little. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be from the 90s. I'm assuming, mid 90s.
Yeah. I remember her vibe was very different and interesting. It was like
you gotta listen to that record Title.
It's called Title by Fiona. All right, I'm gonna check that out after we finish this, because she was interesting. I will say that much. Like, she was.
So the reason I mention it is because if you actually go through her discography and listen to stuff, you can tell that she just didn't give a fuck about what anyone thought. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's what I like.
Right.
And the producing and the mixing and stuff is great.
It's really dope. Well, I'm gonna check it out.
It's raw, bass heavy, not overly like fixed up. It's good. It sounds like you're there. It sounds like you're in the studio.
I love hearing that type of art. You know what I mean? Like, just not giving a damn. Like, you know, I'm just going to be true to myself, and whoever likes it, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm. That's dope, man. Well, one last question I have for you, because, you know, I think this is important, and I ask all the guests this question. What is the mantra for SK? Like, what is a mantra that you live by, like every day? Like, mine's personally is persistence wears down resistance. Like, no matter what obstacle is in front of you, you got to adapt and overcome.
Yeah.
What is your mantra that throughout your life, no matter what you was going through, negative or whatever, that, you know, helped to get you through?
Yeah, man. I have a few. One of them is growth happens outside your comfort zone. Because I'm a very anxious person, and I get like, when I first started traveling for music stuff and started going and doing different things, I would get really nervous and I would get super anxious. You know, I would get to the point where I like felt it was like hard to eat and stuff. And I would have to remind myself that this is just me stepping outside my comfort zone, and this is where growth happens. It doesn't happen just doing what you always do. So that's something that's come back to me a lot. And then also like, I'm still me. Like, be reminding, like throughout all the things that happen in life, the one thing that stays consistent is that you are still like you. You know what I mean? Your person, your like, you know, soul or whatever is still there. So holding on to that, and yeah, those two things are big ones for me.
That's dope, bro. When you, because you know, you did talk about anxious and like anxiety. Mm-hmm. I know it's a lot of people out there that deal with anxiety. You mm-hmm. know, like a lot of people. How do you cope with that? Like, what's a good coping mechanism for you that maybe some people out there, because like they say, each one teach one, you know? Mm-hmm. So what's something that you utilize to help you, like when you feel like anxious and stuff like that?
Man, I don't want to pretend. I'm still trying to figure it out, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lot of it does go down back to the simple stuff that people always say, like breathing. Slowing down your breathing and focusing on it and paying attention to it and giving it time to regulate your body. That's a huge one. And then honestly, it's saying to myself, growth happens outside your, like,
your mantra, you gotta repeat it.
Reminding myself that I think I saw, it might've been like a TED talk or something of that nature, but someone saying, when you get anxious and when you get stressed, you have to turn it, you have to translate it from you being anxious and stressed as like a negative thing to your body just preparing to function at a higher state. Right. Because you're going into something that you're not familiar with. So mm-hmm. your body is preparing to work better than it normally does. And it's actually a good thing, not a bad thing. Like that kind of stuff. It sounds crazy, but it can help. It doesn't, it's not like a, you know, flip a switch and fix it type thing. But it's one of those things that you can add into the tool belt and work on.
Definitely, definitely, man. Well, this has been a dope, dope interview, bro. You know, and I know you're a very busy man. You wear a lot of hats, so we just appreciate you taking the time, and I'm pretty sure the listeners, they're appreciative too, you know, just of everything, you know what I'm saying? So
likewise, bro, likewise. We've done a bunch of dope stuff together, and we got a bunch more awesome stuff to do together as well. So I'm grateful to be here and excited for the future.
Definitely. Definitely, bro. Great things happening. So, you know, once again, this is the Diagnosis Success Podcast with Kyle Hunter. And we just interviewed my brother from another mother, Robert Ronci, a.k.a. SK, producer extraordinaire. And we appreciate y'all listening. Peace. Reality ain't no one